May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be always acceptable to you, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. One of my favorite quirky things about us as Episcopalians is that everybody wears red on Pentecost. You don't wear purple all through Lent. You don't wear white. Well, some of you wear white all through Easter, but we show up, we wear red, and if you didn't wear red, you're fine. You don't have to wear red. Just people do, and the clergy. In fact, you can see we wore red shoes today. And I'll admit, it started as a goof because we were like, that would be really fun and it's festive. But I think it's become something profound. So I want to talk about maybe why the red shoes and the red colors might matter. To do that, we need to talk about what this is that we're doing today at Pentecost, why this matters, where it's from. We need to talk about information versus transformation, and then we need to talk about gratitude. And a little bit of baptism, because why not, right? Because we're here. So we're going to wrap all that up, 12 minutes. That's it, I promise. Okay, so Pentecost starts in Exodus. That's where the whole thing begins. God brings Israel out of Egypt, out of slavery. They cross through the Red Sea, and then after Pharaoh's army is decimated and they are fully free, God gives them something. Does anybody know what God gives them that's new? A bundt cake. God gives them new time. God says, this month, this day that this happened, it's now to be for you the first month of a new year. You free people get a new calendar. You have a new day that is beginning because you were once one way and now you are another. You are free where you were slaves before. Now, this is hugely significant and part of why this story is endured and is so powerful for so many people for so many centuries. Because at the heart of this story is the proclamation of a God that can change things. There is a God that is good enough, loving enough to say anybody can have a new day. Anybody can. The last chapter has not been written in your book. Anybody gets to turn the page. New time is available to all of God's people. That's actually part of what defines them. As God's people, we get to be people that have new time. And so this promise of change, of possibility, as we pass through water, you start to see why, oh, baptism is completely the ritual that we would use to bring people into this way. It's all about coming forward, and we're gonna be pretty symbolic about it today. We're not gonna dunk anybody. We could, you know, it's gonna be hard. But it's gonna be about what needs to be laid low so that something new can be birthed, okay? Things that get to go away in an old life so that something new can come about. That's the promise of baptism. That's what it's about. It's about, can things really change? Pentecost, Exodus says yes. And so what happens then is 50 days after Israel leaves that new time, new calendar, the Red Sea, they end up at the base of Mount Sinai. And on this mountain, God meets them. And God meets them in this kind of tremendous display the scriptures describe. The Lord descends on the mountain in smoke and fire. There is the rushing of wind everywhere. And then it says that the Lord speaks in thunder. Now, the Hebrew word for thunder is the word kalot. Let me hear you say kalot. Yes. Good, Episcopalians. Very good. It means thunder, but Fred Horton will tell you it also means what? Voices. Fred can't actually hear me right now, which is good. I'm just going to make this up. No. It means voices. And so what happens is at Sinai, God gives them the way to live. Here's Torah. Here's the way to live. And so this is so significant to the people that it gets immortalized in two different festivals. Their Passover, their salvation, is immortalized in the Passover festival, okay? And then 7 weeks later, they would have the Feast of Shavuot. It's called the Feast of Weeks. Now, if you do the math, 7 weeks is how many days? 49 days. The day after that is 50 days. And so then you get the Latin Penta, 5, Pentecost. This is the festival of Pentecost, when they remember the Lord coming and giving the law, and the Lord calling them to be the transformed, changed, new calendar people. Okay, are you following me through all of that math? All right, now, here's what's beautiful. In between those festivals, about 3 to 7 days after Passover, there's the Feast of First Fruits, where you would bring the first parts of your harvest, and then, of course, you make it to Pentecost. What some of you are already doing the religious math, and you're like, wait a minute, Jesus is crucified at what feast? The Passover. And then he's resurrected about 3 days later. He comes from the earth at the Feast of First Fruits. And then he's ascended, and then everybody's waiting for his promised spirit in Jerusalem. And they're there with all of these Jewish people from all over the world. Why are they there? Well, because you had to go to Jerusalem to celebrate Pentecost. Passover and Pentecost, you had to show up in Jerusalem for. So everybody's there for the festival. They're there for the party, and they're waiting. And what happens when they're there? Fire, wind, and voices, right? So if you know the story and you're a first century Jew and you are hearing about the day of Pentecost, you're thinking, Sinai is alive. This God that gives new time and transformation to people, this God is still doing it. This God is still calling people to be renewed, restored, transformed. It's still happening. Except it's not just happening for one tribe, it's happening for every tribe. Everybody gets to be a part of this. That might be good news. I mean, let's be honest. Is there anything in your life that you'd like to turn the page on? Is there anywhere you'd like to see something change? Yeah, that's the promise of Pentecost. Pentecost says you get to be open to that. You get to be reminded of that. That is here always for us. Amen. Now, one of the reasons this gets obscured and this has been hard to process is because in the modern era of church, we've gotten really fixated on information. We made religious commitments to the Jesus way, and we said, what you really need is you need to know all the answers. So religion must be about having all the answers. It must be about the right doctrine. It must be about following the rules. And it's got to be about education. And so that became like fixation of the church and how we approached faith. Except it's not the promise of Pentecost, is it? Pentecost isn't about having the right answers. It's about the transformation of life. And so what you see in the Pentecost story this morning in Acts is a people that are getting questions asked about them. What's going on with those guys? What's the meaning of this? But it's not because they have great answers or they have awesome doctrine. It's because something is happening in their life that is unavoidable. And people see it and they're like, what is that? Or are they drunk? To which I know many of you Episcopalians are like, 9 o'clock in the morning, what's that got to do with it? I know, that's right. That's a cheap shot, I get it. Now, so here's what's, so I'm going to invite you into some transformation. I think everybody feels like, yeah, there's stuff I'd love to see change. I've got all kinds of stuff that I would love, a new start, a fresh day. There's some stuff I'd love to see happen in me. I'd even own it. But I don't know, where do you start? How do you get into that? How do you open yourself up to a God that could change things? Here's an idea. Franciscan monk Richard Rohr was recently teaching at a conference, and he was talking about the importance of meditating on the fact that the universe is fundamentally good. Like if God's good and God's healing everything, then that's actually the real story, is the goodness of things. But that's very hard to remember. That's very hard to hold on to. That's very hard to feel and experience. And so he was talking about the importance of contemplation and grabbing onto this. This neuroscientist approaches him afterward and says, Richard, you are more right than you know. We have just finished doing some research in brain development and brain chemistry, and we've identified the fact that when it comes to negative, dark, fearful, hurtful things that happen to us or that we experience, they, to the mind, are like Velcro. The mind grabs it, imprints it really quickly, and we remember it, okay? But when it comes to things that are beautiful, joyous, hopeful, happy, they are actually like Teflon. They're like non-stick when it comes to the brain and development. The brain can't, it doesn't adopt it. They just kind of glance off, okay? Which is why you get 100 emails in a day, and 99 of them are great, but what's the one you wake up thinking about at 2 in the morning? It's the one where she misunderstood your words and made the snarky comment, and so you wake up spinning about it. That's why we hold on to that stuff. You know, you meet with 10 people in a day, and all of it's great, but there's the one time that guy rolled his eyes at you in the break room, and that's what we hold on to. And so what this neuroscientist told Richard Rohr is, he says, what we figured out is that to make the positive and the joyous stick, you have to savor it. You have to intentionally fixate on it, own it, be present to it, think about it, say thank you for it, for at least 15 seconds or it'll go away. Okay? So savor, and Richard, he was like, that's contemplation. That's what I'm talking about. And the guy says, I know, you're not wrong. Savoring something, holding on to the beautiful, the pure, 15 seconds, all it takes to make it stick. I say all it takes, but that's actually kind of hard to do. That takes intentionality, doesn't it? You have to be purposeful about that. But what you'll start to find is it will change you. And think about what you give power in your life by what you let change you, what you hold on to. Why do we let the person that hurt us 5 years ago have all this power to transform us and not looking into the eyes of a newborn child? Right? Why do we let the email that she just did not, she understood who she was talking to, like we let the email get up under our skin and change us. It has this power to change us. And we don't let the beauty of a sunset do it, or the connection we feel around a dinner table with friends and the wine is flowing and the conversation is good. That doesn't change us. We don't hold on to that. We hold on to this. Why? You actually have a choice about how that would go. The invitation of Pentecost, the God that changes things and says, hey, help me out. Play along with me. I am throwing nothing but goodness and benevolence and love at you all the time. It's everywhere to be seen. When you see it, grab it and savor it. So that's my challenge to you. What's the thing, one thing you're going to savor today? Find it, hold on to it. 15 seconds, set your watch. I'm going to meditate on it. It may be that this sermon is coming to an end, and that's fine. Last thing. Why red shoes? Because the action of transformation is not about this place. The action of transformation is about that place. It's always about walking it out this door. It's always about taking it into the world. Evangelism isn't about you having all the right doctrine or ideas or answers to like questions that snarky people ask on the internet. Evangelism is about having a life that changes and people noticing it. That's all that happened to the disciples. People weren't amazed or perplexed because they had cool answers or great doctrine or amazing education. They were asking questions because of what was happening in them. I invite you to let something happen in you this Pentecost. Pentecost is about opening ourselves up to that. We're gonna have a baptism right now that's gonna remind us of that, and there's gonna be water sitting up in here afterward. When you come up for communion, if you need something to change, come get a little baptism on you. Come put your hand in the fountain. Make the sign of the cross in your head or just touch it. Let it be a tactile symbol of opening yourself up to the God that gives new time, to Pentecost that says things can be different and we can show the world what the good news is, not by knowing it, but by being it. So let's be it. Happy Pentecost. Amen.